thank you for your good work on this. Item 8 are reports from Water Board Chair and Board Members. Ms. Cox, anything?
No report.
Mr. Sandell?
No report, but let me say how pleased I am to see us all together.
Yes.
The teleconferencing is a poor substitute.
This is more fun and more effective. It's good to be able to talk to each other and hear each other, by the way. Mr. Jardine?
No comments.
Mr. Dias?
No comment.
I have no comments or reports either. Item. Right. I was going to. Item number 9 is the executive officer's report. However, I'd like to welcome to our group here State Board member Dee Dee Diadamo, who is here with us. She was with us last night and is with us again this morning. I'd ask her if she has anything she'd like to talk to the board about.
Good morning. Good to see you all again. It's been nice to spend the last day and a half with you, and I enjoyed also the opportunity to participate in the tour of the fish hatchery. I just have mainly some legislative updates that I'd like to fill you in on. So I know that I've spoken many times regarding safe and affordable drinking water, and in particular the Monning Bill, SB 623, that evolved into a proposal by the administration to provide for funding, a sustainable funding base for operations and maintenance for drinking water systems that do not comply with minimum standards. And that legislation and trailer bill got a lot of focus over the last several months, and unfortunately there didn't have enough votes. A two-thirds vote was required, didn't have enough votes to get it included in the budget. But discussions continue. There's a commitment by all sides, including sort of the lead opponents to the proposal, which would be the Association of California Water Agencies. They are opposed to the tool that is used to generate that funding source, but as Board Member Cox knows, they're very committed to resolving the issue. So the discussions continue, and I'm really hoping that the next time I come here we'll have a solution for that in this legislative year. Significant progress on water conservation. So we are officially shifting from water conservation to water use efficiency. So, of course, as you know from the many reports that I provided you throughout the drought, the efforts statewide to require through the governor's executive order conservation by, on average, 20% throughout the state of California. And each water supplier had a different target that they were to achieve depending on prior activity for conservation, the idea being don't penalize those agencies that had already implemented water conservation measures. And what we saw through that approach, I actually think that we did, as a state, a very effective job over the entire period that we were calculating the savings. I think it was from 2013 to current, a reduction in use by 4.2 million acre-feet. So really significant success that we had as a state. But now we're trying to further refine things and get the state to be moving in the direction of water use efficiency so that we don't have that issue of constantly looking back and determining what is the baseline and 20% reduction based on what. And so a series of bills were signed into law in May, SB 606 by Senator Hertzberg and AB 1668, Assemblyman Friedman. And these bills operate, they're double joined, so they operate in conjunction. And what they do is require water agencies to establish objectives. And those objectives are based on three things. First of all, a residential water use efficiency target. And the legislature has already told us that that is 55 gallons per capita per day. And there's been a lot of information in the press about that the water board is going to stop people from taking showers and that sort of thing. This 55 gallons per capita per day figure is to be used by the water suppliers to calculate in aggregate what that figure would be for their water service area. And the idea is to reduce that target over a period of years. So we're starting in 2025. We're starting currently until 2025, 55 gallons per capita per day, and that will ratchet down to 50 gallons per capita per day by 2030. There are a number of water agencies that are already achieving this target. In fact, there are some that are achieving this target for both indoor and outdoor use. Sort of the shining star is Santa Cruz. It's definitely attainable, and again, this is for water suppliers. The other component for this water supply calculation on their budget is aggregated residential outdoor use and aggregated commercial, institutional, and industrial outdoor use for landscaping. So this does not apply to agriculture. Agriculture is dealt with through agricultural water management plans. And so that's the second component. We will, in conjunction with the Department of Water Resources, be engaging in a full stakeholder process. We do not have specific targets that the legislature has provided us here, but they have provided us with guidance. They want us to consider land cover, climate, and other factors that vary throughout the state and that we really should be considering. So we're going to be working closely with the Department of Water Resources, and we are required as a board by 2022 to adopt those standards for outdoor water use. And then the water suppliers would be calculating their objectives starting 2023, based upon adoption of the standards, and that would include, as I indicated, indoor use, outdoor use, and also there's a budget for aggregated water loss improvement. So we will be adopting in 2020 guidance or standards for leak detection and water loss prevention. And then there was a lot of debate in the legislature. Many water suppliers have been investing in what they consider to be drought resilient supplies, in particular stormwater capture, desal, and water recycling. And so there's a provision in the legislation that provides for a bonus incentive for certain types of projects that do produce drought resilient water supplies. So very exciting time and a big shift with the legislation. Okay, the just a couple of other things. In June, the voters approved, in the June election, the voters approved a $4 billion bond for parks and water projects. And I'll probably report in more detail at a later time once we develop the guidelines. So currently we still have remaining funding for Prop 1, and through the development of Prop 1, before we started to allocate those dollars that we as a board were provided, we developed guidelines. And so we'll be going through that same process for Prop 68 that was recently approved by the voters. And then there's another bond on the November ballot that a water bond that did qualify, an $8.8 billion bond. And again, if that gets approved, I will come back at a later time providing you with more specifics. And then I know yesterday, the discussion on the triennial review, there was a discussion of your priorities. I found it quite interesting and just wanted to make a few comments. First of all, I agree, in a time of tight, restricted funding, to have many priorities and at the same time trying to be realistic about what's achievable. And I think that you all were right on target in considering working with other regions to see, you know, what are other regions doing or what have they already done on some of these projects. And we had some sidebar discussions yesterday about in-stream flows. Region 1 in particular has been working on that. We have many staff that have been working on the in-stream flow issue as part of the Bay Delta plan. So I think there's opportunities for sharing information and creative approaches. And I just want to flag early on for you the value that I think voluntary settlements brings to the in-stream flow issue. These issues can be extremely contentious because it involves water rights, especially where you have pre-1914 water rights. You know, people kind of dig in their heels, and it can be difficult to force people to let go of those rights. But through a series of, you know, outreach and reaching out to the water suppliers early on, I would just encourage voluntary settlements wherever possible. And we have seen in some regions of the state, in particular the Russian River area, where these settlement agreements have been quite effective. So just wanted to call that out. And then on the mercury objectives and beneficial uses, Region 5 in particular has been working on that. They have quite a few areas where there are mercury impairments, and talked with your executive officer about, you know, maybe collaborating with Region 5 and better understanding about some of the approaches that they're looking at. And then I think other regions will be looking to you all on the work that you've done, the excellent work you've done on climate change and mitigation and adaptation strategies. And so obviously it's a two-way street. There are other regions that, you know, maybe you're a little bit behind on the development of or adoption of a strategy or resolution. And so I think hopefully they'll be looking to you for advice. And then the last piece is that we are going to be adopting, you do have the bacteria issue on your list of priorities, and that is coming before us August 7th for adoption. And so hopefully you'll have some finality on that issue so that you can start to move forward. We do have some resolution language directing our staff to continue to work with this region on some of the creative approaches on attainment. So good to see you all again, and happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments, Mr. Dias?
No questions, thank you.
Mr. Jardine?
No questions.
Mr. Sandale?
No questions, thanks for coming.
Ms. Cox?
Thank you, Chair. I was very happy to see in SB 606 and 1660 consideration for more arid communities, as well as the understanding of the use of swamp coolers in those
yes.
arid communities and the impacts it could have on the disadvantaged communities if they were penalized for using a less energy consuming appliance rather than an EC unit. So I think we've come a long ways from the initial conservation regulations of a few years ago, and as far as understanding some of the diversity in water use and application throughout our state. So I see a great deal of maturity. I'm really excited about the legislation as it sits now regarding conservation, and I think it's something that we can all work towards and live with. So thank you for any input the State Board has had in that development.
Well, thank you for your comments. We were moving so quickly during the drought and had expedited time frames in which to adopt the regulations. And so now we've got, I think, the experience, maybe some wisdom, better, more robust opportunity for stakeholder processes. And we really do need to understand the various regions and how this is going to impact them, and then be open to flexibility where it's warranted. So thank you for your comments.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your coming and visiting with us and keeping us up to date on things. I'm really encouraged by the atmosphere that we seem to be moving towards that really encourages collaboration between the regions, sharing of information and the sharing of tools between the regions, as well as between the regions and the state. So I think it's the only way we're going to accomplish the things that we want to accomplish, is to take the strengths that we have together as regions and try and share those to the greatest extent possible. And I appreciate your helping to kind of act as a clearinghouse for bringing us information about potentials from other regions we might not be aware of that we can look into. So thank you very much.
Right.